Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Pre-market's holding pretty steady this morning as the market watches these renewed Russian assaults on Ukraine, reacts to the State of the Union address last night, and of course, waits for the Fed chair in front of House Financial Services next hour. Oil hits 112 near a nine-year high. Our roadmap begins with, quote, badly miscalculated. The president vowing to make Putin pay a price as the Russian assault on Ukraine continues.
Plus Powell's inflation moment, the Fed chair is set to send his clearest signal to Congress yet that the central bank will begin raising rates this month. And Ford is reorganizing. The automaker is splitting into distinct EV and gas engine divisions with their own P&L.
We're going to begin, though, with WTI, as we said, spiking again, supply disruptions increasing in the wake of sanctions against Russia. During the State of the Union address last night, the president said his Russian counterpart, Putin, badly miscalculated by attacking Ukraine.
6 days ago, Russia's Vladimir Putin sought to shake the very foundations of the free world, thinking he could make it bend to his menacing ways. But he badly miscalculated. He thought he could roll into Ukraine and the world would roll over. Instead, he met with a wall of strength he never anticipated or imagined. He met the Ukrainian people.
And one example of that is the self-sanctioning, Jim, of traders who are not buying oil, ships that are not taking on loads of cargo because they're worried about the future of sanctions. That's partly why we're at 112 this morning.
Yeah, look, I don't think when the president says it barely miscalculated, I think he did believe, Putin did believe that the Ukrainians would welcome him. That seemed to have forgotten the history of the 30s, but was relying on the generals who were telling him it's all good. Or it was just a kind of this reverberation chamber. I am surprised that oil is being stopped. Some of it's being confiscated. I'm surprised because oil sacrosanct in this world. These are always supposed to be politically neutral situations. This is obviously suddenly not politically neutral. They supply a huge amount of oil. They did not, by the way, deliver a lot of oil. There's been a lot of misinformation during the month of February, almost nil to our country. So, David, the misinformation is so vast on this story. Whether it be us looking at Twitter and seeing, wow, there's a Russian convoy that got in trouble.
But you're talking about not just oil. You're talking about the larger war itself.
The president says that he miscalculated. Well, then you could say that, well, did our president miscalculate when we went into Iraq? I mean, it doesn't matter. You can pivot. It's apparent that Putin's pivoting. But the question is, how much money does he really have?
We are in a democracy where pressure can be put on the government, and they're actually worrying about the next election. The decision to wrongheadedly invade another country can ultimately result in some reversals. It's unclear what Putin's off-ramp is here. It's not a democracy. He's an autocrat. It's unclear who he's talking to, who he's getting advice from, whether he's taking any of it, or whether his mental state is completely all there as well.
These are
all key questions that people in the market are trying to ascertain. Meanwhile, we look at the price of oil. To your point, it's fungible.
It's fungible.
It's 11 million barrels a day, though, come out of that country.
No, it's going to be
paid. What, 10% of world, over 10% of what we use every year, every day in the world.
Is the West going to take higher energy prices? Now, remember, our cars are 20% more fuel efficient than they were 10 years ago when oil was up. And that does matter. There's no reason why oil can't continue to go up because a lot of our companies have tremendous discipline and don't want to produce more oil. I mean, Carl, what bothers me about the reportage is that whatever anyone seems to say that's positive about our side, so to speak, is immediately discounted as if Putin is Patton. I mean, there's no stopping Putin. And it seems to me from everything we see and read that Putin's being stopped pretty effectively. So he encircles a very small city and is excited. The idea that they can encircle a large city like Kyiv, or Kharkov, during the summer when there are a lot of holes. I mean, look, Leningrad, yeah, winter, you know, the Germans could encircle, but it's very difficult to encircle a city in the summer. When there's a lot of food and a lot of people who can get killed on the Russian side, because once you encircle, you're stalled, no blitzkrieg, and then the partisans come in and they're all well armed, and the Russians are sitting ducks. Now, how long do they want to be sitting ducks? How long does the generals want to lose people? But this is not talked about. They are this invincibility of Russia, and also because of nukes, as Andrew said, the invincibility is going to be sorely tested because these soldiers have mothers. Don't laugh. That was a big factor in pulling out of Afghanistan. The generals don't like to lose. And I think Putin is, how long can he hasn't killed the generals like Stalin did in 38, 39. But there is a notion, the invincibility, I think that's not true.
Yeah. Well, Lieutenant General Hertling on CNN this morning, I think his line was, they're not controlling Jack. The number of soldiers you would need to occupy just some of these cities, which are 500,000 people each, hundreds of miles apart.
But that raises the question as to what the expectations were in the first place.
Iraq!
How they may
Iraq!
Have greeted as liberators? Greeted as liberators.
Yeah,
well, that didn't work out either.
Look, could we have been more wrong?
No.
Being as liberators,
thankfully, when it came to the actual military incursion, we were quite successful. So we were not
quite
wrong
successful
there initially.
Ask the mothers
initially,
of the people
and then obviously
whose sons
there was
died,
the there was the insurgency, and then there was. Yeah.
I'm just saying
we don't need to go back to that.
No. We need to be able to say that major powers can be completely and utterly wrong.
Well, so this was my question: is that what OPEC Plus means when they keep their schedule of 400,000 barrels? I mean, they're not moving. They barely mentioned the whole Ukrainian situation in their statement this morning.
Well, greedy sons of bitches.
And by the way, Russia's a member.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, what
Russia
the hell? It really helped. But remember, our country, instead of telling our... Oh, by the way, the president says that he's in touch with the oil people. So I decided to canvass the oil people. And nobody's heard from the president. Now I did leave out, David, I didn't get to some of the Marcellus natural gas producers.
You hit everybody else?
I hit everybody else, so.
Yeah. Well, you asked Mike Wirth yesterday, and he hadn't, but...
Well, no, but there's others I checked in with, I mean, including, say, the top five. The president is not calling them and saying, listen, you got to produce more. The president doesn't like natural gas. He doesn't like oil. He doesn't like production. Do you know that FERC 2 weeks ago put some rulings through that made it so it's even harder to get a pipeline through? FERC. Uh-uh. No.
Well, it is part of, right, it is part of the agenda to combat climate change. That's true.
Well, that's right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Now, I'm not some, like... crazy, man. And you see those companies that are reporting there that looked at it. Well, I haven't checked with Shell. Shell may be, there's some reports that Shell is not as adamant that about saying no to the oil.
Well, Exxon is saying no to Russia after really what's been 1995, sort of those early days there, the Sakhalin 1 project. Remember, they have a production sharing agreement there. Since 1995, they're shutting it down, as you can see there reported in the journal, but obviously a press release here as well.
Yeah.
There's about 1,000 employees. They're Russian nationals. But they produced a lot of oil out of there. It's a 30% interest in the project, which they're also in with a number of other nations,
right.
And Russia's obviously as well.
Okay.
And that was an interesting decision. Now, remember, they already got out of Rosneft some time ago, unlike... BP, which is obviously trying to figure out what to do with its 20% stake there.
Sold. They're just going to sell it. What was that? People are saying
stupid
things. Oh, we're going to sell that. I mean,
maybe Putin will buy it.
Guys, aren't you like professionals? Why do you say stuff like that?
But that was, you know.
We're going to get Bobby Bonilla. The Phillies are going to buy him.
Bobby
40 minutes.
Bobby,
I mean, come on. Like, people say things.
The Mets
they just say things.
Bobby
Everyone
Bonilla.
Just says, oh, well, that must be right. Because they say it. It's not right.
All right. But back to ExxonMobil, which has an investor day. We'll get to that in a bit as well.
You know, I'm going to stick around, I think, tomorrow.
That was an important...
I'm going to stick around tomorrow. David has Darren Wood. I'm going to stick around.
Got Darren Wood tomorrow.
He doesn't know that I'm sticking around, but I just can't. Yesterday he led with Mike Wirth. I mean, what is he... I mean, what, you got Conoco coming up next? Shell? There's lunatics there who cut the dividend?
Don't see it as a threat, the fact that I want to actually learn about this business.
Next thing I know, you're going to have
opportunity.
Frazier.
Yes, Jane Frazier also tomorrow. So two good interviews, important. By the way, this has been Investor Week already, Chevron, Exxon, Citi. More to come. March is Investor Day month. in many ways, Jim. A lot of companies trying to reset sort of expectations.
Right.
In particular, Citi, which we'll also talk about a bit later.
I thought
on the
Target's
show,
investor in day was what they're doing. A yawn, and it was the best. Target, by the way, can we just, all retailers who've reported, amazing. Okay, amazing.
How about that Nordstrom?
Nordstrom was incredible. You have the racks turning around. All cloud computer companies, amazing. All cybersecurity companies, amazing. But everything's bad, you see, because everything's bad. Because it's bad.
Well, because there's a significant war going on, yeah.
Well, no, I'm just saying that if you want to look at
potentially mentally unstable leader of a country with 6,000 nukes.
Mentally? Yeah. I mean, that guy could use, there's like.
So, yeah.
He does, there's not enough drugs.
There's a reason that things, people are a little uncertain
right now,
Jim.
I am.
Now, that may all pass, and it may be a great time to own Salesforce.
I'm not a general. I'm not a two-star. I'm not a bird colonel. I'm just saying, if you listen to, Carl, you listen to these companies, it's a halcyon time. I mean, Mark Benioff last night, I hope we get to a clip, but I've never heard Benioff like that. His best number in 5 years. And Neil Bushry, Workday, day before, best number in 5 years. The cloud is doing amazingly well. These stocks have come down big. Ford, I'm sure we're going to get to that. I mean, doing a lot of great things. But overall, we've got the Fed doing something that's going to hurt stocks. And we have a crazy man in the Kremlin who's regarded as being king of all world because he has nukes and because he's supposed to have a lot of friends like the Italians who've divorced him, like the Chinese who've divorced him, like the Germans who've divorced him. So, I mean, at a certain point, you know, you're not just going to make it with Belarus as your buddy. You can't be isolated from the world anymore. You just can't.
Well, then why isn't oil a massive short right here? I mean, look at backwardation, the steepest in, what, years?
I think it's not a massive short because there's been such discipline among our producers who could easily produce another 2 million barrels a day. But just, I have a Rick Moncrief tomorrow who started the whole process. He's dev and Friday in my investing club. Started this whole process of discipline. Mike Wirth being very disciplined. I had Coterra, which is a great company, very disciplined. They're just not producing enough. Why is oil not a massive short? Because I think that if you cut the pipeline from Kazakhstan, Chevron's Kazakhstan pipe that goes through Russia, that's 1 million barrels a day.
Yeah.
What are you doing? I'm like talking.
I'm listening to you, but I'm also trying to read a text from somebody who's also
personal.
No, related to the oil industry.
Keep doing it.
Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, we got Powell on the Hill. 2 days of testimony begin today. This morning, it's House Financial Services. In his prepared text, which dropped about half an hour ago, he does say it's likely appropriate to raise rates at the March meeting. As for the Russia-Ukraine conflict, he says it's, quote, highly uncertain what its effects on the U.S. economy are going to be. Still sticking, Jim, with the notion that inflation will moderate during the course of the year as supply chains loosen up.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see any company saying that to me. I think some companies are hopeful, but nobody has been able to say. I mean, take Domino's. Domino's quarter was a fiasco, and they basically said, listen, nothing's getting better. It's been many things are getting worse. Now, Domino's pretty far-reaching company. It's a big company. And basically they're saying, look, everything supply chain is not good. Can't hire people, not good. Chart, not good. And I just found, like, when I listened to Domino's, I said, geez, that's the essence of why the Fed has to move. I mean, I think there are bad things happening. Domino's basically told a story of disruption and not being able to stay open when they want to. It's not a cataclysm, but it's just the supply chain problems are bad.
Number of container ships imports is down. ISM backlogs are down.
Right.
Prices paid, down. You miss inflation expectations, down. I'm talking sequentially here.
Well, oil is big. And we still haven't produced more people. I mean, it's the people problem, I find, that is. I mean, you know, they just lowered the age of truck drivers.
You mean the labor shortage? People problem, labor shortage.
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure.
You hop off your phone.
Yeah, that? I was reading it. Do you want to go back to the oil market? I can share some interesting thoughts with you.
No, I'm just saying
just
that,
sure that we were
I'm talking about Domino's. I'm trying to be empirical about this. I'm not anecdotal like a lot of people I hear on TV. Domino's is having a hard time staffing, and historically they haven't. And they've cut back dramatically. Remember, everything, if you order Domino's, which you probably never in your life, you probably never have. You can specify banana peppers or no cheese, and this is how you order. This is how you order. Almost all the orders are this. They managed to get rid of a person, and it didn't matter. They were going to have self-driving pizza delivery. No, okay? And they don't have Wonder Truck either. Nor have they heard of Wonder Truck, which I find astonishing.
We got to go.
Okay, I was going to let you say it first.
Yeah.
Oh, Anthony Noto, just a second. See, I got a guy who's talking. Thanks for the support. Look forward to your show. Okay, see, this is my kind of mess.
New York's got great pizza,
by the way. It's not about the dogs. It's not about my kid playing well.
New York has incredible pizza all over the place. You don't need to order from Domino's.
Yeah. We got
to
go.
Well, SoFi's going to open up 15%. So we're going to get to SoFi and Salesforce. Ford, of course, with these comments about splitting the business into a couple of business units, EVs and ICE, HPE, Ross Stores, and a lot more. Take a look at futures. Back in a moment.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Ford's up in the pre-market. Company announces it will run its EV and internal combustion units as separate entities within the automaker. There's Ford Model E will develop the EVs, while the traditional business will be called Ford Blue. At a news conference in the last hour, CEO Jim Farley said that both units will, quote, drive the success of each other, although clearly the ICE business, Jim, is going to be the cash engine, which, and he'll run EVs. And nice little bump in the EBIT margin target.
Yes. One of the things that Jim was saying to me yesterday was, look, the combustion people are industrialists, right? But they're willing to be whatever's necessary. But in the end, they're internal combustion people, and they're not really buying into EV. The EV people, here's something really exciting. It's going to be run by a Doug Field, who was later the Apple car that wasn't developed, but then helped at Tesla to launch the Model 3. What is he banking on, Farley? The Model E, which, by the way, did you know that Musk tried to get that name?
Model E?
Yeah, Model E. So it's going to be the Model E, like Model T, like Model A, Model E. Okay. And he does want to, this is the destroy Tesla plan. Remember, Tesla produced 330,000 cars in America. He wants to do 2 million. I think Farley's ambitions are remarkable. I think that this was good that he didn't do the financial engineering that the hedge funds wanted him to do, which would be amazing because, all the cash is generated by ICE and the EV needed money. Now, don't forget, he's got that stake in Rivian, which is really awful because they just raised the price of something you ordered.
He did. We'll talk about that again later.
But I really think that when I listen to Farley, I would take Farley over Musk in 2026.
In 2026.
When they're going to make 2 million cars. 2 million EVs.
I liked it. I loved Farley.
It's like a SPAC projection.
I want him to pull back from the 2 mil. I wouldn't have called him at the 2 mil.
This does make it, from an investor perspective, it obviously will give a lot more transparency in terms of the progress of both and their potential profitability. And you're going to see one going like this, I would assume, and one going like this.
Well, actually, I don't know, because the internal combustion, the F-350, the F-250, my Maverick, which hits 40 miles to the gallon.
Mustang, Mach-E.
There isn't necessarily a decline in one at the expense of the other.
Right. Now, don't forget, Benioff claimed he only had two Mach-Es last night on the Salesforce call. I think that's an underestimation how many Mach-Es he has.
Okay.
But I do believe that, remember, he's making money on everything. Farley will not make something he doesn't make money on, which I think is incredible. Because people, by the way, you remember the electric one, the F-150 is coming out in the fall.
Does it make it easier for them one day down the road to split the company the way there had been some rumors? He doesn't want to.
He thinks
there's benefits, though, to having them together,
even if
they sort of have their own P&Ls, their own management teams.
Look, he's from that side. It's not like he doesn't like that side. It's just that, and they're going to use the body.
Right. They're going to ask the dealers to specialize. That was interesting. Jonas, Morgan Stanley's out this morning saying maybe it's a model for other legacy OEMs to follow.
I thought so. I thought Jonas, who still has a sell on it, wouldn't raise his price target. Every time I talk to Farley, I get furious about Jonas. Furious. I wonder if his brother hates it as much as he does.
The Jonas brothers?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I do that just because I think he shows such disrespect. He shows such disrespect to Farley that it's almost as bad as that clown on the Chevron call who showed disrespect to C.J. Warner, who's added to the board at Chevron, and he questioned that. Did you not know? Like, C.J. Warner's on the phone call. The disrespect that I find on Wall Street's ridiculous.
Really?
Yes. For people who make things, can you believe they wanted him to split the company up so he could lose in both halves? Farley?
I got nothing for you. Nothing. We got a mad dash,
though.
Just
had me hanging out there.
Why don't you move on to that?
And then, they got to go. And they said, got to go.
We like the commercials.
Yes.
They're good for us.
Pays your enormous salary.
Yes.
Oh, God, you're just...
So you can go on your yacht.
You're just a bad person.
What?
Your mom sent me a better birthday card than she sent you. And he's been jealous about that ever since.
True.
And she had a little ditty in it, too.
She loves
And she wanted to know why I shouldn't have gotten the Jeffrey job.
We'll get Kramer's Mad Dash in a moment. Don't go away.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Pretty busy pre-market here as we await Powell in front of House Financial Services in just a bit. Still mulling over last night's address by the president and some renewed reports today that even with the assaults in Ukraine last night, the Russians are interested once again in another round of talks. Futures are green. Opening bell in 5 minutes.
This was an extraordinary quarter, maybe the best quarter we've ever had. And you can really see it in not just in the quarterly guidance, but where we're looking for next fiscal year. We're delivering guidance of $32.1 billion for our fiscal year 23, which we've now started.
That was Mark Benioff. Yesterday, I put you on the spot and asked you, buy or not, you actually said, okay, yes, absolutely.
After I left that, I said, oh, my God, I could get hung. But I did have great sense after work day.
You didn't. You
lit the clouds on fire.
You got it right.
Thank you. And this was a huge operating leverage. Now, the key number here, there's RPO, which is not run past option, but remaining performance obligation, which is basically the money that's in the bank. $1.5 billion beat. That's extraordinary. Now, it's clean beat on the earnings.
What is that a reflection of, Jim? What is that?
People are paying $100 million. These are $100 million contracts. So, like, the phone companies pay $100 million contracts. A lot of companies are turning over all customer activity to Salesforce. And meanwhile, Tableau is doing quite well. MuleSoft putting it all together. They've changed the accounting, so you can't, there's no more analysts who say, listen, MuleSoft speak. You wouldn't even be able to tell, but it seems not.
Right.
By the way, this Slack is bringing in a lot of customers. And there's been, the customers that pay $100,000 annually, an increase in 46%. Carvana comes in, Netflix, new customer. I have to tell you, I've not heard him, and he's ebullient, but I've not heard him this positive, in part because they're open. He was coming from the Ohana.
Yeah, where was he?
The Ohana.
The Ohana. He was not at the headquarters, is what you're saying.
He's the Ohana floor of the headquarters.
Oh, he was on the, okay, he was. So he was in, he was actually in the Salesforce.
They're back and they're doing a lot of business in person. Right. And I think that matters. Workday doing business,
he's one of the, he said you don't ever have to come back, right? Salesforce is one of those companies that did say that.
It's optional.
Yeah.
But I just think that this quarter represented a very big reacceleration from the last 5 years. And taking a lot of business from SAP. Yes, this is from Oracle. It's very interesting to see that if you have a subscription business of any kind, including your phone, he's in charge of it. There's a very big lift when you bring Salesforce in. I once brought Salesforce in before I knew Mark, when I used to be important at thestreet.com. And the lift is rather amazing because you just don't really understand how to do subscriptions without them. And that's what a lot of companies are discovering. So it's very positive.
Big implications if that scales up. There's the opening bell and the CNBC real-time exchange at the big board at Simon Youth Foundation, helping to curb the dropout rate. And at the NASDAQ, Rigetti Computing celebrating its listing via SPAC. Breadth filling in pretty nicely, back above 4330. Actually, a lot of interesting, I mean, Salesforce is opening, going to open higher. HPE, with the raised guidance, going to open up about 5%.
You see who upgraded that? Tony Saganegi.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mr. Negative. And I've got to tell you, the gloom is so palpable that you have to say, well, why is the market going up? I mean, oil's bad, Fed's bad, interest rates bad, going wrong way. And I say, well, look, you know, when you have this kind of rally, some people who are kind of caught on the wrong side, thinking that banks or something, you can let some stock go. But this rally is not supposed to happen. This is a rally that's not supposed to happen. It's a rally that says something is wrong with the negative thesis. And I'm working like, you know, like a banshee to try to figure out what that is, whether it be Russia not winning or whether it be oil going to come in or maybe Fed navigates as well. But, Carl, there's no reason for this rally, which is often a compelling reason why you can rally.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing. Odds of no hike in March went to 10% yesterday after being at zero for almost a month.
Is that true?
Yes.
Holy cow.
So you think part of this is about a moderating Fed path?
Well, I mean, I think that this certainly gives... I mean, look, Jay Powell needs a narrative, and he's getting a narrative. Jay Powell, by the way, David, would love things to get better, and all that litany that Carl said, what's getting better, like, he wants to try to, like, play this out, play his hand. He's trying to play his hand, which is meaning he's trying to augment his hand like when you're blackjack.
Yeah.
You know, you want to try to get... Yeah, you try to augment your hand, split cards,
yes,
put more cards out because the dealer has a six showing.
Right.
That's where he is versus inflation. There's a six showing in inflation today because of a lot of the things that Carl said.
I'll tell you one thing that's moving this morning is some China names. Las Vegas Sands going to lead the S&P as the Journal drops this piece about China actively exploring an exit from zero tolerance.
That is COVID. Amazing. And by the way, the PMI yesterday, both service and manufacturing for China was good. Maybe China's going to join the Council of Nations and start doing better after the lockdown. David, a lot of people felt the Olympics were very successful because there was no big COVID outbreak. That's not exactly it's kind of a low
true.
Bar.
All that said, the Journal also reporting, though, on the administration sort of starting to move deeper into its own China policy, not obviously removing the trade barriers that were put in place by the Trump administration. The fact that the Chinese have not made good on that phase one of the trade deal that was signed under the last administration. And whether or not they might start to get even more aggressive, that is the Biden administration.
I think that was amazing. On
301 and on
right at this moment,
holding
you can bring them into
China, China's different technology sectors more accountable for certain anti-competitive
Bill Miller was talking about how Alibaba, I love Bill Miller, great value business. Alibaba's the cheapest ever been. But you know what else he likes?
Meta. Yeah.
Facebook. And he talked about that the price-to-earnings multiple of Facebook was lower than IBM.
It's lower than a lot of companies.
Right, but IBM, I thought that was...
Yes.
Just uses that.
Still growing faster than IBM.
I think that Reels is going to crush TikTok. You heard that from me first. Reels is going to crush TikTok. Now, Morgan Stanley, this note, sticking with the buy today.
Really?
Cut EBITDA by 15%. They said Reels will grow 15% from 6%. Well, that's going to come in right from the hide of TikTok. Mark Zuckerberg, every day, works on the destruction of TikTok. When you speak to him, TikTok. I don't want to be TikTok with Mark Zuckerberg.
Well, as he should be. TikTok is an incredibly powerful platform. The AI, the algorithm there is very effective at giving people what they want and keeping them focused on it. And they're under-monetizing.
But Facebook, they have...
I know you have faith in Zuckerberg's ability to TikTok.
There are many things that I may not have faith with Zuckerberg.
Yes.
I do have faith that he is going to come out and Reels is going to do to TikTok what Stories did to Snap.
Okay.
Which is what? Let them continue
take
to
share.
Be
take share. No,
let them continue to be a pretty viable company.
Yeah, well, no, okay, look, Facebook is undervalued. And the key issue is Reels going to be, remember when he came out here and it turned out he was a desktop program and and then they moved to
mobile.
Right, and so then in 2018, there also was Cambridge Analytica. He doesn't really focus that much on Cambridge Analytica because, you know, that's...
It wasn't kinda good.
She was at with the president
it's
yesterday.
There's been a lot that's not good.
Mark's a chief antagonist from Facebook. Oh,
Frances Haugen?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the box.
Oh, right.
Last night, along with Pat Gelsinger.
Yeah, Pat Gelsinger got a standing O.
$10 billion? What's he talking about?
Oh, actually, I think the president said $100 billion.
$100 billion.
I was like, that's
how about $500
billion? $100 billion.
I'll make it $700 billion. I see seven in the back. How about $800?
But it was, to be fair, it was $100 billion if you passed the bill.
Checked $800.
You have to pass the bill back
better. No, I mean, but that was, look, Pat I love. Let me just say from point blank, I love him. I love his optimism. I love his spirit. They do generate a lot of cash. But you know what? There's not a lot of stuff in Ohio. You need a complex. The reason why Ohio isn't the capital of semiconductors is because there's another place where there's like semiconductor capital equipment and the engineers. But what?
You mean California?
Yes, it's called California. And there are plants in Arizona. I remember when they opened the plant in Oregon. I wanted to go to that plant.
Yeah, well, that's then Texas is working on it. It's rise of the rest.
Suddenly, Pat is everywhere. And my takeaway is buy AMD and NVIDIA. There's my takeaway. He's busy building plants. They're busy making money.
I think our viewers probably knew where you were going on that one.
I think he's a good guy. He's very exciting. He was up there. You see all the shots? He's right there.
Yes, I did. There. I did.
They could use a bill. I mean, he's just campaigning for a bill, okay? Lisa Su is campaigning to destroy Intel. And NVIDIA, yes, they had this hack, and I've isolated the hack, and it was bad they got some information. But if you're selling NVIDIA off that hack, you're a hack.
Okay. A lot of people are selling shares of Citi this morning, guys. And, you know, yesterday the banks performed quite poorly.
Actually, worst day in almost 2 years for the KBW.
It was a very bad day. Today we are seeing a bit of a rebound in the sector other than Citi. As we mentioned earlier, Citi has its investor day today. It's an important day for CEO Jane Fraser. She's been running the bank for 1 year. And today is a day when they're presenting a lot of new targets. She will join us tomorrow in an important interview as well. We'll go over and see her at Citi's headquarters, which is not too far from
here. Is we meaning me?
No, it'll be me.
Thank you. Okay.
But I thought I'd be kind to you. But yes, that will be me. You will be back here, and I will be there. But for now, Jim, the market is not responding well to, I guess, what had been expectations, perhaps, from some targets that would have been a bit more aggressive. They seem to be very, you know, when you look at the presentation, I haven't had a chance to listen, but when you look at the slide presentation, very upfront about their shortcomings, including not spending enough on systems,
Brian
on
Moynihan
risk controls.
Made that very clear.
And you've talked about that a lot
Brian
as well.
Brian Moynihan was spending fortunes to get this stuff right.
Near-term expenses will continue to increase. They guide to total expense growth of 5 to 6%. That's ex-divestiture impacts. And overall, 10 to 12% expense growth for the first quarter of this year, ex-divestiture impacts. Maybe a bit more than people had anticipated. They're targeting an ROTCE of 11 to 12% in the medium term.
Right.
And low single-digit revenue growth for this year. So it may be a bit below, Jim, what some had hoped they would come in for in terms of their expectations for.
I earlier referenced Blackjack. I feel like that she got a hand with a five dealer showing king. What kind of hand did she get?
It doesn't appear that it was the easiest of hands to actually beat the dealer with.
Never got that clawed back that Revlon money.
No, and that goes back to risk controls, and that goes back to systems.
Spending money.
That huge screw-up where they sent an enormous amount of money to Revlon creditors.
At a certain point, it seems like the book value starts to feel like, remember Glenn Fed? Cal Fed? Book value was like 3x. I mean, when does book value play a role there?
They still have this incredible global franchise that sort of is unparalleled.
Including Russia,
where to their chagrin, they're the one. I mean, they are going to have to take some sort of a hit there.
Like Rosneft?
But some exposure.
But
they do have a global network that is unparalleled that they want to build on that.
But
they obviously are shrinking certain parts of the bank as well.
But you got to find out why the book value is so high if it's tangible book. It's almost impossible for that stock to be worth. I don't understand that.
You simply don't understand why it's so undervalued unless book is overstated, in your opinion.
Thank you. Which is really, Carl, we don't want to overstate a book major.
Right. Some viewers have questions about CRM being negative, Jim. The guidance was mixed a little bit. They guide fiscal Q1 revenue above, but EPS below. Some say that fits a pattern historically for those guys.
Well, look, it's going down after almost every quarter. They're obviously forced to coalesce to sell it. All I can tell you is that on the fundamentals, it was fabulous. It was. It was just a great quarter.
It's just
You know, if you want to sell it, fine, but you're selling it because you think that the price earnings multiple at 43 is too high versus the Fed, but just in terms of how the company did, what am I going to say? I mean, I followed the company since the stock was at 8.
Yes, you
actually
have.
Since it came public, and this was a great quarter. I can't say it was a bad quarter. I just can't.
And the guidance was also.
Guidance was fabulous.
Yeah.
And the money.
Which does differ from the last quarter where there was some disappointment.
And I was worried about it. But yes, I mean, if you want to sell it, you understand you're selling it because of the price earnings multiple. He's not selling it because of when I had him on, it's very clear when he's just being conservative, the guidance, but look, people want to get out of high multiple stocks, be my guest, but this is a terrific stock. I went on for the Travel Trust, I'd love to buy more.
Yeah. Pretty good day for retailers, especially specialty, Urban, Ross Stores, and you guys mentioned Nordstrom earlier. Margins beat, guides above, maybe returning some cash this quarter.
Yeah, and look, I thought Kohl's was good yesterday and Target was good. The consumer is very, very strong. It's really interesting. What's the stock that is weak of the consumer?
A&F.
Well, it's Dollar Tree.
Oh, and A&F, I guess.
And A&F, well, and, yeah. But Nordstrom was quite a call because it was almost like,
wow,
hey, we did well. Like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a kind of a wonderment to them doing well. Like, wow. And Urban's cheap. I do think that Target was so far and away the best. And then Lowe's was the second best in this period. Lowe's was amazing.
Yeah, I know you.
Home Depot again,
like that quarter.
Didn't shine. I would not have been as negative as
Home turned Depot a little was. On Home Depot. Guys, ExxonMobil, we mentioned it earlier in terms of their pulling out of the Sakhalin 1 project where they've been since 1995. But they also have an investor day today. And, you know, not much in terms of new targets. The one thing, the company does plan to include annual structural reductions of $9 billion a year, that's expense reductions, essentially, by 2023 compared to 2019. Now, previously, they'd been talking about as much as $6 billion. That was just February 1 when they reported numbers. So they have increased that target. Interestingly, that's above even where, not the last round of activists, but the round of activists prior to Engine 1 had sort of been targeting, which was a hope that they could get to as much as $9 billion. And then you just come back to how much cash this company's generating. Yeah, we asked the same question of Mike Wirth yesterday.
Right.
They did $48 billion in cash flow last year. I mean, the numbers are going to be enormous. What are you going to do with your excess cash? Well, we'll have a chance to ask Darren Woods that tomorrow.
That Mike said
when
that
he joins
could buy
25%
of the company in a couple of years. I'd love to hear whether Darren's going to commit to the same level of ESG that Mike is doing.
Well, Exxon is committed
They're
to
big,
significant ESG goals, without a doubt.
That board is an ESG. What board is the Audubon Society?
I mean, you know, just in terms of even in the Permian, where they plan to basically go all potentially electric at some point. Emission plans there, zero emissions for the Permian Basin operations by 2030, and a 20 to 30% reduction in Scope 1 and 2 greenhouse gas emissions by 2030 over 2016.
I got to hand it to them. That's very impressive. Hey, Carl, by the way, your comment about China on locking, that's a Starbucks opportunity. Starbucks has really been held back. If people are allowed to go out, you buy Starbucks, even up two.
And you see Lockheed and Northrop leading the S&P lower.
Wow.
Lockheed's down 4%.
That's how it should be.
That's nice.
Well, it's not like last night the president said what we need is more Javelin missiles. I didn't hear that.
No.
Remember how, like, President Reagan would say we need a 600-ship Navy, and, like, the Navy goes, like, oh, man, we have, like, 300 ships. But they didn't get – Reagan was like, whoa, you know, we're just going to double everything.
Yeah. We're going to watch that. A lot of interesting moves today. By the way, a reminder, you can always get in on the CNBC Investing Club with Jim. Sign up, find out more at cnbc.com/join the club. And, of course, we always like to supply the QR code on your screen. Before we go to break – Watch yields as we get closer and closer to Powell in front of the House this morning and that testimony. Watch the two of you here this morning, just below 1.8. Be right back. Got 1% gains here as the rally gets extended in the opening minutes. Dow's up 300 plus. We are awaiting the Fed chair in front of House Financial Services. Day one of a two-day testimony here. We'll watch that in the next few minutes. In the meantime, Squawk on the Street is back after a break.
Shares of Nextdoor symbol Kind tumbling more than 45% since its November debut, so it's probably not kind. But the social networking app beat revenue expectations yesterday in its first quarterly report since going public. We got to find out what's going on here. So we're thrilled to have CEO Sarah Friar join us now. Sarah, let's just put it right to you. You had a $59 million rev quarter. That's an increase of 48%. And the market does not seem to care. So I welcome you on the show and try to figure out what this is, because you're a business person, you're a finance person, and that seems out of whack with what the stock's doing.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. And we always appreciate being on the show. Look, we came off a great year in 2021. Q4 was a highlight quarter. We grew revenue 48% year over year. That's really differentiated. For the year, we grew revenue at 56%. We accelerated from 2020. Engagement, which is really the future for Nextdoor. Wow, our weekly actives increased 32% year over year to 36 million. And what I love is people are coming back weekly. Over half of neighbors come back every single week, and on average, they come back four times a week, making us one of the most active consumer platforms. And then finally, we raised guidance. So we lifted our guidance to 255 million, up from 252. And don't forget, we put over 700 million in cash on our balance sheet. So we feel like we're in a position of strength.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand this. What is the open rate on the on all the emails we get?
The open rate is strong. We are a platform that absolutely engages people through notifications. And one of our investments, our product roadmap is focused on active, valued communities. Active is about often notifying you with the right notification at the right time to the right neighbor that draws you back to the platform. And so that's why we see now 52% of neighbors back weekly, an all-time high for us. So whether it's an email, whether it's an in-app notification, regardless, it's a way to bring you back to local and to what's going on around you.
So, Sarah, do you think that it's just the temper of the time, so to speak? I mean, these were numbers I felt that a year ago would have sent your stock doubling. Is it just that we're in an era right now where we don't want to see revenue growth, we want to see earnings, and we no longer care about these early stage companies, SPAC companies, because this has not been, the markets, it's been unkind to shareholders.
It's certainly not been kind. Like, we have traded with our comp set. I don't think it's anything to do with the SPAC market. If you look at Pinterest, Snap, Twitter, even Meta to some degree, that's our comp set. And so actually, since our deal was announced, we've traded even slightly better than that comp set. So I think it's less about this incredibly strong business model that we're putting up and much more about the multiple, is what you're alluding to. And multiples are driven, of course, by how the market is feeling about risk on or risk off. What I tell my team all the time is control what you can control. So we're going to build a big global business. We have the dollars on our balance sheet to keep investing against that. Our product strategy is working. It's really innovative. And the multiple will ultimately take care of itself. The stock will take care of itself. So, and often these are times when we can be aggressive. We have a lot of great talent coming to Nextdoor at the moment, driven by purpose, but also driven by the growth that you're seeing. Great talent's going to build great products. So we couldn't be more excited right now.
Sarah, just a quick follow though. So what I'm hearing you say, and it's David, is that you don't think you've been penalized as a result of coming public through a SPAC, as opposed to perhaps having pursued the more traditional IPO route at some point down the road?
I really don't, David, because we were a company that could have come public on any route. We could have done an IPO, we could have done a direct listing, we could have done the SPAC, which we did. Again, I would go back and look at the bits, We're a community platform, but we fall in that group of social media and also community type of plays, like a Roblox or maybe a Bumble. All of us have had a rough time with our stocks as those multiples have compressed on high growth. Market always has eras, and we may just be in an era of really battening down the hatches, growing our business, and that's why I'm delighted that we raised capital when we could, and that we have a balance sheet now to put to work.
I couldn't agree with you more, Sarah. The $800 million tells it all. Return on investment for one I've used you is very, very strong. I think that people just don't know you well enough yet. So I want to thank Sarah Friar, who is the Chairman, President, and CEO of Kind, as I call it, which is Next Door Holdings. Thank you, Sarah. It's great to see you as always.
Thank you both. Take care now.
All right, Jim, what's on Matt tonight?
Okay, we have Okta, which is identity. By the way, it's an identity issue at NVIDIA. This is a very, very hot area. Stock has not been that hot. And then we have Slootman. Slootman, as we know, the Flying Dutchman, Snowflake. It's got me staying till late. I don't care. I do anything Slootman once because he's a tough guy and I don't want him to hurt me.
he's got you in living in fear, Jim. We'll see you tonight. Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern time. You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.